I'd like to call to order the Thursday, December 7th, 2017, City of Columbia, Missouri Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Here.
Mr. Harder?
Here.
Mr. McMahon?
Present.
Mr. Stanton?
Here.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Here.
Ms. Russell?
Here.
Mr. Tuohy? I am here. We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mrs. Thank you, Ms. Secretary. Approval agenda. Mr. Zinner, is the anything needs to be changed on our agenda?
No, not at this point, Mr. Strotman.
Thank you. Approval of minutes. Commissioners, we were sent out the November 9th, 2017 minutes previously. Are there any corrections or notations needed of those minutes from November 9th? I see none. Do we just want to do a thumbs up on the minutes? We have all thumbs up. Thank you. Moving on to our first subdivision. At this time, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-199. Please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Thank you, commissioners. Case 17-199, a request by Engineering Surveys and Services on behalf of TKG Street Peters Shopping Center, LLC, for approval of a one-lot minor subdivision of their properties on the west side of Providence Road between Locust Street and Elm Street. The parcel is 3.26 acres and currently undeveloped. The property is zoned MDT, which is the mixed-use downtown district. The applicant is also seeking a design adjustment regarding the required right-of-way dedication for Providence Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the applicant is seeking approval of a one-lot minor subdivision of their 3.26-acre property located on the west side of Providence Road, immediately south of Locust Street. The replat is necessary in order to prepare the parcel for development. It contains a number of lots, parts of lots, and former street right-of-way for 2nd and Locust Streets, which were both vacated in 1966. Per the UDC, construction of any structure is not permitted across an existing lot line, and therefore the parcel must be reconfigured into a single lot and platted to gain legal status. While the right-of-way for 2nd and Locust Streets were vacated in 66, the easement rights were retained over the former rights-of-way, and so these easements are being are requested to be vacated under case 17-200, which will be heard by City Council in conjunction with this case. So the applicant's also requesting a design modification for relief from the requirement to dedicate an 18 feet of additional street right-of-way along the Providence Road frontage. A minimum of 106 feet of right-of-way is required by the UDC based on Providence Road's designation as a major arterial roadway. The adjacent Providence Road right-of-way is 70 feet wide with a 35-foot half-width. Properties to the north and south of the subject parcel are fully developed with the same 35-foot half-width right-of-way. Sidewalks and all public infrastructure are in place within the right-of-way as well. Staff doesn't believe that granting the design adjustment would be detrimental to public safety. This parcel is the sole remaining undeveloped property along Providence Road corridor in the downtown area. There are no city plans or MoDOT plans for expansion of this segment of Providence Road, and approving the design adjustment will not abrogate any provisions of the comprehensive plan. While there are no known plans for right-of-way expansion in the area, MoDOT has indicated that they will be reconstructing the sidewalk along Providence Road frontage as a part of a future ADA improvement project, and that construction will require a temporary construction easement, or TCE. Given the future project and easement need, MoDOT recommends that approval of the plat be conditioned upon the applicant providing either MoDOT or the city upon request any necessary TCE for sidewalk construction along the Providence Road frontage at no cost. Just wanted to point out, so you'll see in this aerial here, the sidewalk is there in existence. Apparently, it has some ADA issues, however. So MoDOT will be reconstructing that. You'll see on the plat all of the easements and street rights of way that are from the past. You'll also see here that there is a 10-foot electric easement and then another easement that's actually 28 feet that encumber the entire Providence Road frontage of the site. So the TCE, while still necessary, will just cover some of the same area as the existing utility easements. So I believe I lost my place. Yeah, Mr. Reed, it will speak to that a little bit more. But I think, like I said, the TCEs are still necessary and probably still need to be a condition of the plat. I think Mr. Reed will be interested, though, in kind of limiting the time that condition is in place. And also just to note that the TCE would be required across the entire frontage of the property at a depth of 5 feet. So that'll probably just need to be placed into the ordinance at a later date. So the proposed plat has been reviewed by internal and external staff. It meets all applicable standards of the UDC. The requested design modification and the plat are both supported by staff for approval. And so our recommendation would be to approve the University Center subdivision and the requested design adjustment, subject to the applicant providing at no cost to the city or MoDOT upon request any necessary TCEs for future ADA improvements to the sidewalks along Providence Road.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for that. Commissioners, questions of Mr. Palmer? Yes, ma'am.
I did have one question, and I don't know if this is the time to ask about this. I wondered about the pedestrian crossing at Locust as you're heading into the property. There's increased pedestrian traffic because of Lucky's, and I can only assume with what's coming forward. I don't know if that was discussed in this or if that would be a future discussion.
It wasn't really discussed as part of this. If we can go back to the plat. The area here, it's kind of hard to understand what's going on. There's a 10-foot waterline easement that's being dedicated by this plat here. Within that remainder, that little corner there, that's actually an ingress and egress easement. What I'm told is that's sufficient for what will be done in the future there, and it'll be, I believe, is that a MoDOT project, the pedestrian project?
I'm unaware that we have anything, so I would imagine it would be a MoDOT project if we're not directly involved in some pedestrian crossing here at this point.
I drive through that intersection multiple times during the day, and pedestrians are trying to get across, and most of the traffic is turning to head south on Providence Road, and I think sometimes you see concern as pedestrians if someone's making that left turn out of Locust to head south onto Providence. I guess it would be nice if it was a clearer marked or a signalized intersection with a crosswalk and maybe a pedestrian crossing. But I'll tell MoDOT that.
Additional questions, commissioners? I have a quick question, Mr. Palmer. Is the TCE a typical requirement that we would put in place with that as part of our approval?
I believe they're usually more between MoDOT and the property owner, but at this point, MoDOT saw the need for it and asked that it be a condition.
Okay, I was just curious. I had not seen that before.
And this isn't the first instance in which we have had a TCE raised as part of a platting issue. Over on College, we had a similar situation with the reconstruction of the fraternity house just north of Sanborn Field. There was a necessity for the TCE, so somewhat of the language in the staff report that Mr. Palmer prepared was similar to language that we had prepared for that previous platting action.
Thank you. This is it's not a public hearing, but it is, as in past practices, we'll open this up to anyone that's in the audience that'd like to come forward and give us any relevant information. We just ask that you give us your name and address first.
Good evening. My name's Tim Reed. I'm with Engineering Surveys and Services. We agree with the staff report and the staff recommendation. The condition of the temporary construction easement, we just want to make sure it's understood that it'll be a 5-foot temporary construction easement, and we want to put a term on the a length on the duration, so we'd like it to run through 2018. I believe the project is supposed to happen in summer or fall, but the property owner doesn't want to let this condition linger on forever. So they're happy to grant a temporary construction easement for this sidewalk construction, but we just want it to be the 5-foot width and through 2018.
Commissioners, any questions of the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Reed.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to come forward and speak with us? I see none. Commissioners? Yes, Mr. McMahon.
I have a redirect for staff. Mr. Palmer, is a TCE that extends throughout calendar 2018 sufficient time?
MoDOT has indicated a project completion date of November 2018. So I would assume.
Will we, if MoDOT runs over a month or 2 months, is that a problem? Do we have a problem there, Mr. Reed?
I think that would have to be part of the discussion when the TCE is granted of whether or not an overrun is permitted.
And that will be included in the ordinance when it is?
No, I don't believe so. I believe it'll be
part of the development agreement.
The condition will be that they grant the easement, and then I believe beyond that it would be left to an agreement between MoDOT or the city, whomever is asking for the easement, and the property owner.
I would suggest to if MoDOT's intention is to have the project completed by November of 2018, not begun, obviously you're not going to make sidewalk improvements in the winter, that TCE would probably be obtained in the spring to early summer, which at that point, giving maybe adequate time. If the TCE is not, if for some reason MoDOT, however, runs into difficulties in getting to that project due to other projects within its maintenance world, a time restriction upon the dedication or the provision of the TCE may present a problem. The TCE and the construction project are outside of the city's control, however. A much simpler approach would have been to have had the TCE granted at this time when the plat is being produced, to then be at some point abandoned after the project has been completed. What we're asking for, and what this is, what the condition is similar to our College Avenue project, where the city was not asked to restrict when it could come, or MoDOT could come and ask for that TCE. It was all dependent upon when they could get to the construction project. We do have a defined completion date, but we don't know what may happen between now and that point. I would suggest that at a minimum, to ensure that we have some overlap, possibly due to a project overrun or delay, that the TCE have a specified time frame of probably 18 months, at which point that would put it into the spring of 19, to which they could then acquire it if necessary, not just the calendar year of 18. That would be the suggestion as an alternative. I don't know if that impacts the applicant or the applicant's client by extending it for those additional 6 months, but that would be a question to ask them. That would be our take, I think, that we have some flexibility. I will be quite honest to tell you that while this recommendation may be forwarded to City Council and the Law Department may determine that they are not going to approve anything with a time limitation for a TCE for a pending project. And while the request is going to be made here, may be included in your recommendation, and may be reiterated at Council, I don't know if it will make the ordinance.
All right. I just thank you for clarifying that, because I given what I do for a living and getting what I've seen of construction projects. Mr. Reed, no disrespect intended. Mr. Chairman, could I call Mr. Reed back up, please?
Yes, sir. Mr. Reed, would you also give us your name and address, please?
Tim Reed, land surveyor with Engineering Surveyors Services.
Just to follow up a little bit, it's just you and I both know that may be too tight. That may not work. And that's why I did that follow-up question. So
okay, well, and that's not acceptable to the property owner because the property owner has all sorts of things going on with this site, and they just don't want a
lingering
condition that long lingering. They're happy to discuss with MoDOT MoDOT's needs. MoDOT may not even need a construction easement to build this sidewalk. If we can just limit it to the 5-foot width for the year 2018, and then at some point, if MoDOT sees that that's not going to be reasonable, they can approach the property owner to see if they can do something to make it work or extend the construction easement for another few months. But 18 months is too long to. For the property owner.
The reason I brought that up is because you set that condition forward, and that's something that we have almost no control over, right?
Well, this is new to me also, a condition for a temporary construction easement. Usually MoDOT will just discuss that with the property owner, and perhaps this was just an easy mechanism for MoDOT to tag this onto
put
this
it here.
Flat.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Just want to let you know that we might not be able to guarantee that.
Commissioners, additional discussion, motion, questions for staff, clarification if needed. Ms. Rushing?
My question is if you don't believe that the temporary construction easement is necessary, how do we separate that out for purposes of voting on the application?
MoDOT's comment was that it would be necessary.
That's MoDOT's. I mean, that's up to them, isn't it? I mean, they have the ability to get a construction easement if they want it.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's typically an agreement between MoDOT and the property owner, and they would just seek that as a standalone easement on their own, and not as a condition of a plat. That can be done. So
is this something the city normally does on behalf of MoDOT, or is this an unusual circumstance?
This is MoDOT making a request for the TCE condition.
As part of our overall review
team. But they're doing it through our approval process.
As part of our review team, Ms. Rushing. So MoDOT is requested to submit comments as it relates to platting actions within the City of Columbia along its primary roadway frontages. So not unlike any other reviewing department, MoDOT is making a request that the plat's approval be conditioned upon the issuance of a TCE. In this instance, we would consider them an extension of the City of Columbia, given the fact that this property is being replatted. The TCE is being asked for outside of their right-of-way, which is why it must be identified. As Mr. Palmer has pointed out, that TCE is within an existing 10-foot platted City of Columbia utility easement. That does not necessarily mean that utility easement was reserved for the purposes of allowing a temporary construction easement for a sidewalk project. So you will have overlapping easements in place for two different purposes. And that is why this is being requested as part of the platting action. It is the appropriate location to request that this be done. If the City of Columbia was doing the project, we would require the TCE to be shown on the plat probably.
And I understand that.
So,
but this isn't the City of Columbia that's requesting the easement.
They are requesting it, though, as part of the review team, as though they were part of the City of Columbia.
Commissioners, Mr. Stanton.
Well, this is a unique situation, and being the fact I'm in construction, I would feel uneasy about putting some kind of pressure on MoDOT you don't know what's there. You know, what might happen. You, like we talked about scheduling. We don't know about, you know, this may not be a priority for MoDOT at this particular time. I wouldn't want them to start and then they have some unforeseen situation where they may need a little bit more time, and then now it's, now they're in the jaws of the owner to maintain that easement. Unless there's something, I mean, like normal practice, hey, I need the construction easement until the end of the project. The project's going to have its own schedule anyway. Every project does, has a completion time and a number of days to complete it. I think that's sufficient enough to deal with this, and I'm almost inclined to not even approve this if it's that much of a problem.
Commissioners, additional discussion? Mr. McMahon?
I have a question for staff to follow up on what Mr. Stanton said. We can approve this without the TCE?
As is any recommendation of a reviewing department, yes, you can. We would not advise that. The request has been made. MoDOT could negotiate for the easement itself, and that would be that is the prerogative of the Planning Commission. It is a request of a reviewing department. There is not a regulatory obligation for that TCE to be provided.
I appreciate this, Mr. Zinn. I think we're almost in the position, it feels as if, and Mr. Stanton and I both over construction, it feels as if we're being asked to sort of half promise something that we can't possibly influence or deliver, and we have no influence over.
Well,
even if the city council were to approve it, that would still.
Hence my original comment that a time frame restriction on the request to have a TCE established. I don't know if our city's legal department would accept that as part of what the ordinance that would be produced to approve this plat would actually include. It is a condition. It is a condition that a TCE be granted upon request. I have recently become aware that they're desiring a time frame restriction. So this is news to us as well, not having had an opportunity by which to react. With the entity asking for that, is that reasonable? I do not believe we want to delay the processing of this plat.
And I have no
quite
desire
honestly,
to delay the plat.
If it's the commission's desire that because it does seem, as you have said, half promising something that may not be able to be delivered, if you want to leave that request off the table and not as a condition, as it has been presented, that is the commission's prerogative.
Applicant, just to revisit that quickly, the applicant is more than welcome to revisit that with legal, MoDOT, or council.
That is correct, and this item will not be presented to City Council until the second meeting, I believe, in January. We have adequate time in which to have MoDOT generate a request within the 2018 calendar year for a TCE, after they've had an opportunity to discuss with the applicant.
Let me revisit one thing real quick. We have, and done this year, I know, have approved something, and then there have been other details worked out before it went to council.
That is correct. And that's, I guess, what I'm suggesting. If the commission is uncomfortable with approving the plat, if you're willing to approve the plat, but you're uncomfortable with approving it with the condition, don't approve it with the condition. We will, as a staff, and I imagine the applicant will, the applicant won't, I'm sure, we will, as a staff, contact MoDOT, explain to them what has transpired. MoDOT then needs to take action in order to secure that temporary construction easement through their means, not through the means of the platting action. Now, if MoDOT wants to send a representative to City Council and say, no, you need to approve the plat with a condition, that's MoDOT's choice.
All right, let me back up. One quick, though, Commissioner Lowe, you have a question. I was about to make a motion.
I think Mr. Zinner answered it in his comments. Thank you.
Will you take a motion, Mr. Moran?
I would like to make a motion, and Attorney Caldera, if you could help me here a little bit, I want to make sure I get this correctly. I would like to make a motion to approve this plat as is without the TCE condition.
What about?
The design adjustment, sir.
Are you seeking to approve the final plat with the design adjustment, but without the additional condition of the TCE?
Correct.
That's the motion you need to make.
Second.
He's revising it.
Are you going to revise your motion?
I want to make sure that we got it. We have enough uncertainty here. I just wanted to add a little bit more in. So,
Mr. Rushing, I'll remove your second then. Okay, go ahead, Mr. McMahon. We'll start over.
I move to approve the plat of University Center Subdivision and request design adjustment subject to the application. Wait, where did you stop that? Stopping there.
Yeah.
Withdraw the last section. I move to approve the plat of University Center Subdivision and request design adjustment. That's case 17-199.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. We have a second.
Second.
Ms. Rushing, thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, further discussion or any clarification needed on this motion? Mr. Stanton.
They need the construction easements. That needs to be made a win-win situation between MoDOT and the owners to make this go through. My opinion.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments, commissioners? If not, Mrs. Secretary, when you have a chance for roll call.
Yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
No.
Mr. Strodeman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. 7-1 motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Our recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council for their recommendation. Moving on to case 18-6. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to this case, case 18-6, please disclose that now so that all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. A request by Allstate Consultants on behalf of Lutheran Senior Services for approval of a two-lot final plat constituting a replat of lots 1 and 2 of Lenore Subdivision to be known as Lenore Subdivision Plat 2 and a design adjustment from 29-5.1, which requires areas identified as sensitive land to not be included on lots intended for development. The 100.3-acre property is located at the southeast corner of New Haven Road and Lenore Street and is addressed as 3300 New Haven Avenue. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request for a replat of two existing platted lots with an accompanying design adjustment for the subdivision. It's about approximately 110-acre piece of property located here on the locator map you can see, southeast of South Haven and Lenore. We have a bit of an aerial oblique view. Again, you can see New Haven on the top of the screen. And I consistently forget the street on the south side here, and I don't have the street names in front of me, but Lenore on the west side and Sugar Grove on the south. Thank you, Mr. Zinner. This is a quick overview of the requested plat. The two new lots that will be created is lots 1A and lot 2A. The original configuration was lot 1, and in this layout, north is to the left. Lot 1 is in the lower right corner, as you can see, kind of the ghosted lot 1. It's being increased from about 18 acres to about 31 acres, and lot 2A is a decrease of the existing lot 2 from about 92 acres to about 80 acres. Generally, the scale of the site overall is remaining the same. There's some additional right-of-way being granted for current standards of street right-of-way cross-sections. For New Haven Road for an additional 10 feet and Sugar Grove Road for an additional 5 feet. And I'll come back to this here in a second, but this is the land analysis map, a couple areas there that I've highlighted. In red is a tree preservation area, and in green is another conservation area, which I will discuss as part of the design adjustment overview. In general, as a replat, we did review it. Staff determined there are no detrimental impacts on the replat to surrounding properties or the city. The sensitive areas located on the site were identified as a tree preservation area and also Clear Creek, which runs east-west across the property, generally in the middle of the site. The design adjustment being requested is to the section that deals with sensitive land areas, 29-5.1B2. This requires any sensitive lands that fall in certain categories or other lands that were identified through investigation of the site to be located on a separate common lot that is not for development. The request here is not to place these on a separate common lot, but to place them in easements, but still located on developable lots. And that's the request for the design adjustment. Part of the request also includes the inclusion of building envelopes on the platted lots. This is similar to another request we've seen previously that was similar in scope and context, where it was a very large lot development. The common lot creation was viewed at least as not as compatible with a larger scale development. This site has a lot of the same characteristics. We have a large lot, which is going to contain most of the sensitive area, which is about an 80-acre lot. It's also a commercially zoned property. The tree preservation portion of it typically would not be required to be placed on a common lot in a commercial zoned property. So it's a little bit of a nuance to this site. It's actually zoned residential, but with the development that's on the site, it actually operates more in a traditional commercial sense. It could operate within a commercial zoning district as well. So that kind of lends itself a little bit to that design adjustment. I think from previous conversations we've had with the sensitive areas, typically a typical residential subdivision lends itself a lot better to the common lot designation for the sensitive land areas. This, with being just two lots, has less, I think, the impetus to place it on a separate lot that would protect it from development. Generally, though, going through the design standards, first of all, going through the requirement that would allow them typically not to be placed on a separate common lot, we do find that that requirement's not met. Generally, they have to show some reason why it can't be placed on a common lot. In this situation, as the other ones, generally, it is feasibly possible to place it on its own separate common lot. But after reviewing the request for the design adjustment, we don't find it's incompatible with comprehensive plan objectives. It's not detrimental to the property, surrounding property. While maybe not unique in this situation, is similar to other ones we've granted in the past. So overall, staff does support the requested design adjustment for that. And let me jump back here just to show you what it is they are applying. So the red has an easement over the top of it. It has a tree preservation easement. In this case, it'll be a separate document, which actually requires a documentation of all the trees within that area that have to be granted at the time that goes to council. The green area does not include the tree preservation area, so they will be granting a separate green space conservation easement over that too, which actually restricts any type of development within that area. So that's the type of easement that we placed on that section, which is the remaining portion of Clear Creek that falls outside of the tree preservation easement portion. As you can see on the plat, a little hard to see here, but along the edges, they have kind of the grayed out line. That is the edge of the building envelope, which restricts any future development outside of the preservation areas. And actually north of the Clear Creek, to the west in this site, falls outside the building envelope too, so there's actually some additional protection there that they won't be able to develop that portion of the site either. But overall, staff does recommend approval of the replat in addition to the design adjustment as well. So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Commissioners, any questions for staff? I see none, as is in past practices. This is not a public hearing, but we'll open it up to anyone that's in the audience who would like to come forward and give us any relevant information.
Good evening. I'm Brian Harrington with Allstate Consultants here on behalf of Lutheran Senior Services. I don't really have anything further to add to the staff report. I thought it was good, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Commissioners, any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Harrington.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional speakers that come forward? I see none. Commissioners, any discussion? Questions? Mr. Stanton.
I'd like to make a motion.
We will take that motion.
As it relates to case 18-29, Lenore Subdivision Plat 2 Replat Design Adjustment, I move to approve.
Second.
18.6, I'm sorry. As it relates to 18.6, I'm sorry.
So the motion was for case 18-6 as opposed to 18-29.
And I still second.
Motion has been made by Mr. Stanton for approval of case 18-6, and it was seconded by Mr. McMahon. Is there any discussion or discussion needed on this motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready for a roll call.
Yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. 8-0 motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Our recommendation for approval of a two-lot final plat will be forwarded to City Council for their recommendation. At this time, I'd like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 18-29, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Thank you, commissioners. A request by Allstate Consultants on behalf of Elvin E. Sapp Revocable Trust for approval of a five-lot preliminary plat to be known as Bluff Creek Estates Plat 9 and a design adjustment for 29-5.1 to allow more than 30 lots from a single point of access. The request is a revision to a portion of the existing preliminary plat of Bluff Creek Estates Phase 1. The 6.17-acre subject site is located on the east side of Bluff Creek Drive, approximately 2,400 feet north of Grindstone Parkway. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you had stated, this is a request for a preliminary plat revision. So this site, which is approximately 6 acres, has an existing preliminary plat over the site, and we'll review that in 1 second. The request is for approval of a revised preliminary plat with a design adjustment, as you stated. And just for commission's information, there is an accompanying final plat with this, too. However, that will go to council. It'll be based on the outcome of their vote on the preliminary as well. So, and I'll touch a little bit more on the timing and the process for that. Here's a context kind of oblique aerial for the entire site. As we'll talk about in a minute, as far as the access concerns go, the location here, this intersection here, is the one point of access for basically everything north of that intersection along Bluff Creek Drive all the way up to Grindstone Creek on the north end of the project. This is a little tighter view just so we have a little better optics there on the site. As you can see, single-family residential developed generally along this location with some small office development also up there and office development here to the south. As I had stated, this is a revised preliminary plat. The original preliminary plat, which was Bluff Creek Estates Phase 1, I believe, was approved in 1992, and that's kind of the small inset here. You can kind of see the darkened line that provides the outline for the site, which is the same as what they're requesting for the revised this evening. The original had a layout with 10 lots along a cul-de-sac. The revised preliminary would reduce the number of lots in total from 10 to 5, and of those 5, one of them would be a common lot. So 4 buildable lots, essentially, and it would be the elimination also of the street right-of-way into the site. So these 4 lots would front along Bluff Creek Drive. It is revised preliminary, so it's subject to the UDC standards. The site did have, as identified in the review, have sensitive areas located on it. Lot 5 contains all of the sensitive areas within the bounds of the subdivision. Generally, it's preservation areas, but also some steep slopes and also a stream corridor section, and all that would be protected within the common lot, and that meets UDC requirements for the sensitive lands. The design adjustment this evening that's being requested is for the waiver of the restriction of the UDC that only allows a maximum of 30 lots to be platted when there is only one point of access to those lots. So as I had pointed out prior to this, this intersection of Bluff Creek Drive on the bottom of the screen and Lacewood Drive, that represents the sole point of access for all lots going north. So there's only one way in and out of the neighborhood, and that's what this provision is meant to address. Currently, at the within this area with one access point, as you can see in the blue, there are 63 platted lots, platted single-family lots. To the north in the purple is a PUD zone property with a development plan that's been approved, but not final platted, which was entitled for 44 single-family lots, attached single-family lots. So taken together, those two developments right now constitute 107 lots within the development. I can tell you the Cotswold PUD, which is the purple area, received its own design adjustment. At that time, it would be a variance with the PD process to exceed at that time what the standard was, which was 100 lots. So at that time, they received a variance to basically for an approval of a development plan for the 44 lots, and it was restricted to 44, no more than 44, for a total of 107 lots on one access point. So that essentially absorbed all the capacity on this location or on this street for any additional lots to be planned. Since that time, the UDC was passed. The restriction within the code changed and became more restrictive. So now the limitation for lots with one point of access is 30 lots. So that is the request that they are making tonight. And the full portion of the code only allows 30 lots max without generally approval from the fire department. So this provision is meant basically to minimize or put a cap on the risk for the number of lots with one access point where if a road closure happened, it would limit the number of homes and residents that would be affected by any one road closure. So it's meant as a public safety provision within the code. Reviewing the standards for design adjustment, several of those address public safety and also whether they have a detrimental impact to the neighborhood or residents. Based on the fact that that portion of the code is meant to address a public safety issue, staff found that those portions of the design adjustment were not met given the fact they were looking to exceed the current 30-lot standard. Furthermore, one of the standards for the design adjustments does require or does consider whether or not this is a unique situation. We do have other situations where development in an area is restricted or not allowed to proceed because they are dependent on neighboring property owners to develop and to extend streets that would then kind of open up the capacity within that area to plat additional lots. We had one recently come through actually in that situation. So this is not so much unique. One portion of this is a little different is that the method in which they could provide the second means of access was planned when this was originally platted or preliminary platted in 1992, and that would have been for an extension of a bridge across Grindstone Creek. Since that time, the bridge has not been constructed. The city is generally responsible for constructing bridges in most situations where it's a significant investment. Smaller stream crossings, maybe not, but this one would be the requirement of the city to construct in the future. So that is a limitation on this site for any further development past what they have right now. But given the fact that the current limit is 30, they do still have 107 lots out there at this time. With that being said, after review of the design adjustments, staff finds that they do not meet the standards within the design adjustments to grant the design adjustment. Our recommendation is denial. Again, the methods in which they could alleviate this design adjustment is for a second point of access or to receive, again, approval from the fire department through other methods to satisfy the safety requirements. So, again, we're recommending approval of the revised preliminary plat, but we're recommending denial of the design adjustment. And I want to kind of provide a few options for the commission to consider because this is a little complicated. So the preliminary plat itself does not need the design adjustment in order to be approved here at the commission or by council. The limiting factor here is that it would not be allowed to be final platted without the second access point or without approval from the fire department. So the three real options tonight are recommend approval of the preliminary and approval of the design adjustment if you so choose to do that, in which case then this could move forward and it could be final platted at council. If you find that they do not meet the standards for the design adjustment, you can still approve the preliminary if you feel like the preliminary outside of the design adjustment still meets the criteria of the UDC, which staff has found that. So you could approve the preliminary but deny the design adjustment. If that course of action continued to council, the preliminary could still be approved, but they would not be able to approve the final without two of those conditions being met, the access to the fire department. If you feel the preliminary plat doesn't meet the standards for granting the revision, then you could deny both of those, and that's fairly self-explanatory. So, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Commissioners, any questions of staff? Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Smith, is the previously approved plan, is that still valid?
It is. Per our old subdivision standards, once you final platted a portion of a preliminary plat, that preliminary plat became vested. It did not expire.
So they could build the cul-de-sac plan?
That is correct. If they chose to move forward with the existing layout, it would not be considered a revised preliminary. It would be considered a final major, and that actually would go straight to council. It wouldn't come back in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission unless they also still requested the design adjustment.
Okay. But they don't need the design adjustment since it's already been approved.
They would still need a design adjustment because under the old code, 100 lots was the maximum. So that has still been exceeded even if we use the old subdivision regulations.
So do they need the design adjustment to build any new structures on that road at this time?
At this time, that is correct, yes.
Got it. The neighborhood collector. So on the CATSO plan, Bluff Creek Drive is identified as a neighborhood collector.
That's correct.
Is it a type A or a type B?
I'm not sure. I have to review that. I believe it's probably built prior to the new standards in the appendix for the street design standards, but it probably falls within one of those two. We could look it up if we have.
Well, type B doesn't allow driveways, and the new proposal adds driveways to the collector. So it would be, I would think, critical to identify which one it falls under in order to approve one plan over the other.
You said type B does not allow them? Does type
yes.
A?
Type A does.
And based on the improvements that have been platted and the driveway connections, I would contend, Ms. Lowe, it was viewed as a type A, and when we created the two standards at the time we revised our street cross sections, this roadway existed, and that decision is made by our traffic engineering department at this point as we move forward, even with the two. But the development, as you see here in this aerial photograph, has direct driveway connections to Bluff Creek, and therefore we would not be otherwise restricting them just because now we have a type A and a type B. We would be holding consistent.
Thank you.
Mrs. Russell.
Would we be able to approve the design adjustment pending the approval by the fire department, or is the city council going to just, that going to be part of city council's decision regardless?
If you approve the design adjustment, then no, that basically waives the requirement for them to need the second access point. If you don't approve the design adjustment, then they can still receive approval if they go to the fire department and get the approval from the fire department. So they don't need the design adjustment if they go that avenue. And at this point, there's not been a conversation yet on what that would take for the fire department directly between the applicant and the fire department on what that would take, but there's some avenues there, I think, that are available.
And that, if I'm correct, Mr. Smith, that is specifically dealing with the preliminary. So as Mr. Smith pointed out, the design adjustment is not a necessity for the preliminary. It is either approval of the design adjustment or authorization by the fire department for an alternative means would be necessary in order to secure final plat approval. So you could approve it. We would probably recommend do not condition the preliminary plat on the authorization by the fire department. Just
because that's already required.
That's already required, and that would be a requirement should council decide not to approve the design adjustment as well. If that is the direction the commission may be leaning in, the alternative that exists then to the applicant is seek approval from the fire service concurrent with the final plat. Because the council is going to be faced with the same question. Can you approve the preliminary plat without the design adjustment? Yes, you can, but they can't, as the applicant can't build anything until he complies with either the second access or the fire service grants them waiver or grants them permission otherwise by meeting another standard within the fire code.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clarify the process for me here, would you please, mm-hmm. Manager Zenner. Chief White hasn't seen this yet, is that correct?
No, the fire department has reviewed it.
I've seen it.
They have.
And they've said no?
They've said it doesn't meet the UDC standards. We had the conversation that on what it would take for them to grant approval through the International Fire Code. And at this point, then it would just be a matter of them receiving some sort of commitment or plans from the applicant in order to approve that alternative. So they've seen it, and I think they have something in mind, but at this point, the applicant has requested the design adjustment, and that is what we're processing.
Okay. I wondered how we got here.
Yeah,
that's why I asked that question. Thank you.
Any additional questions of staff, commissioners? I see none. As is in past practice, we'll open up this subdivision case 18-29 to anyone that's in the audience that'd like to come forward.
Mr. Chairman and Commission, I am Ron Shai at Allstate Consultants, and I too wonder sometimes how we got here. The design adjustments that are required for a subdivision that was platted preliminarily in 1992 seems unfortunate or unfair to a client to have to comply with the UDC at this point. But especially when you're reducing the number of lots from 10 to 5. I understand the situation with regard to driveways onto the road, but I looked at the staff report with regard to the significance of that and the significance of the meeting the criteria for the design adjustment, and I think that significant based on the report is certainly different than what I would call significant as far as impact on this drive with these four lots. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify that fact, plus the developer would love to just build these four houses and be done with design adjustment, and hopefully that's the way this turns out.
Commissioners, any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Shai.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional speakers have to come forward? I see none. Commissioners? Discussion? Additional questions from staff? A motion? Ms. Lowe.
Just clarification on the neighborhood collector. It's option A that permits driveways, not option B. For me, the biggest concern was clarifying that the collector or that the lot rearrangement, that did seem to me to be a change. But I guess I do consider this to be a life safety issue, and it is the fire code that it's tripping. So I don't feel comfortable waiving or approving the design adjustment without the fire department input. So I would make a motion I would move in the case of 18-29 to approve the revised preliminary plat of Bluff Creek Estates Plat 9 and deny the design adjustment.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Ms. Lowe has made a recommendation, a motion on case 18-29, and it has received its second by Mr. Stanton. Commissioners, is there any discussion needed on this motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. 8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Our recommendation for approval of case 18-29.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Zinner.
As a procedural matter for City Council, this is a preliminary plat with a requested design adjustment. It will be required approval by ordinance, which is a two-reading process versus a single read for a resolution, which is standard. Council will have the authority to override the Planning and Zoning Commission's denial of the design adjustment by a supermajority vote of 5 of the 7 council members.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Moving on, our first and only public hearing of the evening, case 17-238. At this time, I would ask any commissioners who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to this case, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see none. Thank you. A request by Smith Lewis LLP on behalf of NGT Inc. to annex 10.36 acres of land into the City of Columbia and have it designated as MN, which is our mixed-use neighborhood district, as its permanent city zoning. The subject 10.36-acre tract is located at the northwest corner of Brushwood Lake Road and Scott Boulevard. The subject property is currently zoned Boone County AR, which is the county's agricultural residential. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. The applicants are proposing the annexation of their property located at the northwest corner of Brushwood Lake and Scott Boulevard. They're doing so in order to connect to city sewer and to utility services. The applicants intend to develop the property with a neighborhood commercial center. Per the city's annexation policy, connection of property to sewer system requires annexation. So the sewer to which the subject property will connect crosses over the parcel. So technically it is served. The parcel is located within the urban service area. Water and electric would be from the east side of Scott Boulevard, as you can see from this aerial here. Contextual uses include the, I believe that's a Boone County fire station there, the break time, and then everything appears parkland that's annexed into the city, but everything else you see on the west side of Scott Boulevard is in the county at this time. So water and electric would come from the east side of Scott Boulevard and are provided by the City of Columbia. Depending upon the layout of the future development, public mains for infrastructure may be required along the full frontage along Brushwood Lake Road. The CATSO Major Roadway Plan designates Scott Boulevard as a major arterial, and Brushwood Lake Road along the south edge of the property is designated as a neighborhood collector. Therefore, additional right-of-way for each of those roadways will be required at the time the property is platted, but that's not a condition of annexation. So since the subject property is not considered a legal lot, it must be platted in the future, and therefore the right-of-way will be attained at that time. The proposal has been reviewed by staff, meets all applicable zoning, comprehensive plan, land use standards, the existing utilities to which the lot would connect have available capacity, and the requested permanent MN zoning is supported by staff and is consistent with adjacent zoning. As I stated, the fire station is directly across Scott Boulevard. Break time is around the corner. The PD area behind break time here is planned at this time to be office. I forget what would be here. I believe it's a retail.
Part of Copperstone, part of the Copperstone retail.
Right, so it'd be a retail, and then there's even a couple of potential restaurant locations adjacent to that. So I believe the neighborhood mixed-use zoning is consistent with the context there. So that is all I have. A recommendation would be to approve.
Thank you. Ms. Lowe.
Can you comment on the fact that 90% of the site is in the floodplain?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It is a bulk of the property is in the floodplain, and then the remainder almost completely is in the The bulk is in the floodway, and the remainder is in the floodplain as well. So that is not a consideration necessarily of an annexation and a rezoning. The applicant is currently in the process of having the flood map changed because of fill that's been placed on the site. And I believe in 2010, they received a land disturbance permit from the county in order to remove illegal or inappropriate fill so that they could properly do it for that purpose. And so if you go out there now, and you can kind of tell from the aerial there, that portion of it closest to the intersection has been filled substantially. So that's yet to be determined, but they I believe they have applied for a change to the FEMA map in that location.
That eastern part of the property, however, is significantly below the roadway level.
Correct.
And I think what Mr. Palmer is trying to point out here is we're talking about with this application the appropriateness of the zoning designation, not
okay.
the developability of the property at this point. The developability of the property is determined at the time of subdivision and design platting in order to secure the ability to be able to develop the site. Regardless of what jurisdiction this may lie within, it must be annexed into the City of Columbia to receive services. So annexation is a prerequisite to be able to proceed forward to development. Development may or may not be possible on this site based on other regulatory standards. The applicant was advised of that at the time the concept review was held. The applicant is here this evening and can address what efforts they are undertaking at this point in order to resolve the floodplain and floodway-related issues. Brushwood Lake Road, which is what is defined or depicted on this graphic in the northern reaches of this property, was relocated as part of the Scott Boulevard reconstruction project to get it out of the floodway. That roadway, as it has been relocated right now, is not in it. Therefore, that portion of the site provided the appropriate floodplain development permit is obtained. If it is in the floodplain or the flood fringe, is allowable to be developed. If it is part of the FPO, it under our regulations within the code, as has been brought to light earlier this week by an application, where the sensitive features analysis map would require, as part of the subdivision process again, would require the identification of all floodway and flood fringe or flood plain. The applications provisions of the code, back in Article 1, specifically indicate where there is a conflict between a overlay zoning designation and any other provision of the code, the overlay regulation shall apply, regardless if it is more or less stringent than the other portions of the city code. Meaning, the FPO allows development within the flood fringe, provided you meet the requirements that are within the code itself. Therefore, any area that is out of the floodway, which is non-developable by FEMA's regulations and non-developable by the City of Columbia's standards, is developable, provided you meet the requirements contained within the FPO and you meet the floodplain development permitting requirements. So the issue of the area that is within the floodplain as being non-developable is a non-issue, given that the code exempts our ability to classify that as part of the sensitive features and regulate it out of development. That is what the code reads right now, and that is something that has recently come to light. So that, however, is an issue that's discussed at the development stage and at the platting stage. Right now we're dealing with is MN, given the land use context, an appropriate use. If you believe that it is not, and that some other zoning designation may be more appropriate here. That is a decision that the Planning Commission needs to consider as part of rendering its recommendation on the permanent zoning. Annexation, as we have discussed before, however, is a council prerogative. It is a policy-related matter. If the City Council determines that this property is an appropriate extension of the city's boundary, their annexation, their consideration of annexing the property and assigning a zoning classification to it, be that what the Planning Commission recommends or what they determine to be appropriate based on the applicant's request, ultimately lies with them. At this point, we present to you what the applicant is seeking, and we present to you our analysis that the MN zoning district is appropriate given the land use context, hence our recommendation. The environmental issues we'll deal with at the time that those need to be dealt with, and that would be at subdivision platting.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Ms. Lowe.
We've had some cases come through already, and part of the discussion was whether the zoning was appropriate for a site that was located in the floodway, and we decided that a residential designation was not appropriate and that the site should remain at an agricultural. So that's why I'm bringing this up, because I'm wondering if maybe this shouldn't be MN, but maybe remain more in the agricultural due to the nature of the sensitive areas located on the site. So I do feel it's still a pertinent question, not something that would come up later.
And I'm not suggesting, Ms. Lowe, that it is not a pertinent question and it is not something pertinent to your debate. What I am telling you is that just because the property lies within the flood plain does not render it non-developable.
That's an interesting point. I'm wondering if we need to bring that earlier case back forward, because I do think that we were following a slightly different line of argument on that one, and I would like us to remain consistent as possible.
Well, no case that has been presented this evening is impacted by that at this juncture.
Not this evening. Earlier
that case is actually already on its way to City Council, so that is something that will have to be dealt with at the council level. This is information that unfortunately came to our attention earlier this week and impacts cases moving forward.
And I agree, and I think that it's if this is the case, it's very, and maybe it's something we need to address in the UDC.
That would be something that we would be bringing to your attention, given the fact that the exemption that is defined within the particular section 29-1.6 relationship to other ordinances, when you read this section, you can read this section and make an interpretation of the language as it relates to the overlays applying specifically to our urban conservation district overlays, not necessarily meaning to apply to all overlay districts. However, unfortunately, the way that the code is currently written without it being comprehensively amended, it applies to all overlay districts. It does not call out our urban conservation. It says overlay. And as such, that is how we have to review the code and interpret it at this point. It is definitely an item, as I was informed earlier this week of this particular finding, that came as a shock to me as well, and that one that we will have to discuss as a staff and as a commission moving forward as we present text amendments. But for this point right now, what I can tell you is where we run into the issue of environmentally or sensitive land features that are part of the flood plain, those areas can, if an applicant is willing to identify those and call them out within a preservation easement area and avoid development within them. However, they are not regulatorily obligated to do so given the regulation that I have just quoted to you that allows them to utilize the overlay provision.
This is confusing, because I've been through a similar case, and I remember stating that I agree FEMA does allow development in the flood fringe, but the UDC, as we were interpreting it on that case, did not.
And the UDC,
and now it sounds like we're, you just said previously FEMA and the city would allow development in the flood fringe.
I believe, and Ms. Lowe, what we were looking at was the specific section as it related to the sensitive features. The sensitive features, which are inclusive of the flood plain.
I understand. I'm not sure I understand this well enough to make a decision on this.
And that
case.
That's fine. I raised the point because the question has come: is the land area, if it is zoned MN, developable? And if it is, it is considered a developable feature per the code, and our recommendation and our analysis is based on the fact that that is considered a developable area provided it meets the regulatory standards, the floodplain development permit standards, and that it would also meet our other platting requirements. If the commission has a differing opinion of the intensity of that use, that is the commission's decision.
Well, and I share Ms. Lowe's concern because the area we were talking about previously, if I recall the same one that you do, the possibility of flooding, although there was a record of flooding in that area, it was at least flatter. This lays the property is way below where the roadway is, which to me means it's really sensitive to flooding. Much, you know, and I think an issue arises when we aren't consistent as to why we're not consistent, and that bothers me.
Mr. McMahon?
If I may. It sounds like we have to resolve some textual issues. I'm sorry, the applicant, for us digressing here. We're feeling our way forward on the new code and some of the applications. I would suggest that, just to kind of be on the record, that a way to resolve this is to take this particular type of overlay out, and any applicant at any time is certainly welcome to attempt to upgrade any of their properties to take them out of the floodplains or floodplain or flood fringe. But I think in the future we might be hesitant to issue approved preliminary plats or zoning changes before that work happens. That's just my thought. Because, again, where we were a little bit ago in the evening, where we're approving something or we've been asked to approve something or recommend something, where the agency, there are other agencies bigger and different than us that have to make that final approval for anything and go forward.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Mr. Stanton.
My fellow colleagues, I think I just need to iterate that this is just an annexation, just to get it into the city zone. So all the stuff that concerns us still can be addressed later, and definitely the market can tell. And I'm definitely going to say again, the last case we talked about, I built in New Orleans, and the Indians said don't build there, and they did it anyway. Has nothing to do with this being annexed into the city. I think my personal opinion is, I think they need an opportunity to be able to connect to city resources. The market and Mother Nature and FEMA, with all that, will determine what they can do with that later.
Thank you, Stanton. Any additional discussion, commissioners? If not, I'll open it up to the audience to come forward. We'll go ahead. This is a public hearing, so case 17-238. If there's anyone in the audience that'd like to come forward at this time, we would welcome that.
Good evening. My name is Phoebe Lamar, and I'm here on behalf of NGT Inc., which is the owner of the property that's at issue. As staff has already informed you, we're here seeking to have the property at the corner of Brushwood Lake Road and Scott Boulevard annexed and zoned MN as it's annexed. The zoning that's requested fits this location well. It's right at the roundabout at the intersection of Vodder School Road and Scott Boulevard. It has planned commercial zoning on two of the other three corners of the roundabout. The final fourth corner has not yet been annexed at this time. In order to obtain utilities for this site, it's necessary to obtain annexation because there are utilities available, and at least the last I knew, and I'm not as familiar with the UDC as you all, but the last I knew, it was required that if you were within a certain number of feet of city utilities that you actually hook on to those utilities. So if we don't annex and we don't allow them to hook onto those utilities, then we are preventing them from having utility service on this site. The intersection at which this property is located is busy enough that it might have made sense to request zoning as mixed-use corridor rather than mixed-use neighborhood. But in order to accommodate concerns of residential properties that are located within fairly close proximity of this property, my client instead elected to request the mixed-use neighborhood, which is a step down. The property owner submitted previously an application to FEMA to have this property recategorized as far as whether or not it falls within a floodplain. That application was submitted in April. There's been a number of things go back and forth since then. It hasn't actually been issued as of this point, but we have no reason to believe that it won't be. We also will be submitting to the county commission an application to vacate the prior location of Brushwood Lake Road, which was, as staff mentioned, reconfigured in order to accommodate the extension of Scott Boulevard. We believe that will actually be approved in March. My client is not intending to immediately develop this property, but is trying to put himself into a position that they can sell the property to somebody who will be developing it. In the course of submitting the plat and submitting for permits and all of that sort of thing, all of the issues with regard to flood plain, flood fringe, et cetera, will be explored and certainly figured out prior to the time that somebody else buys this property. And that will also be the city's opportunity to obtain additional right-of-way that's needed for Brushwood Lake Road as well as for the roundabout at that intersection. The uses that are included in MN zoning make sense in this location, and annexation is reasonable based on the utilities that are already crossing the property. As a result, we would request that you all annex this property into the City of Columbia and also zone it MN, which fits within the zoning classifications that are already present surrounding this. For all these reasons, we ask that you approve this application. Isaac Cox, who represents the owner, is here this evening, and so am I, and we're happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions of the speaker? I see none. Oh, sorry, Ms. Lowe.
Ms. Lamar, can you just comment on what types of uses that you anticipate that you're requesting the MN zoning for?
The uses that are included in MN zoning?
So shopping, service facilities.
Those are the same. Those are very similar uses to those that are permitted catty-cornered across in the Copperstone commercial zoning. And that's what we're looking to do.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Ms. Lamar.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to come forward this evening?
My name is Isaac Cox. I'm a realtor with RE/MAX Boone Realty, 33 East Broadway, 65203. I just want to make myself available for questions for you folks. And before we do that, briefly explain our letter of map amendment application that we have submitted to FEMA. There are 3.78 acres on that property that have been elevated well beyond the flood level. And we've been conservative with that request just to prevent any issues going through FEMA. The requests for additional information that they've had have been all clerical. There hasn't been any issue with us stepping too close to the boundaries or the flood level. Scotts Boulevard is not the flood level. The flood level is much lower than that. Every piece of footage that we're requesting to be removed from that flood map is at least 2 feet above the 100-year floodplain level.
Thank you, sir. Commissioners, any questions of the speaker?
Struggle with your name this evening.
Mrs. Burns.
Has FEMA indicated when they might be able to give you a final ruling on this?
Very soon. Stan Shaver's a signature on another part of our application was the last thing they requested. I know I can't speculate on when FEMA is going to get it done to us. I obviously would have appreciated it to be done before now, but I understand they have to go through their due diligence.
I just feel like there's so many things that need to be tied up about this before we zone it in an MN zoning situation. And you said you applied in April?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Lowe.
You said 3.78 acres would be raised above floodplain level.
Is raised above floodplain level, correct.
So what are you planning, or what's the plans for the remaining 7.4 acres, approximately?
That would be up to the future developer. I mean, just like we
even though most of that's in the floodway.
Oh, I would think it would behoove somebody to possibly develop, you know, begin a development on the 3.78 acres and possibly raise the remaining property up over time, just like the current owner has.
Can I ask staff a question? Do we allow raising floodway?
I'd have to confer with our floodplain administrator. I do not believe we will allow work within the floodway. I'm sure that there is a FEMA process for raising or filling in the floodway, and that's probably...
there has to be a net zero.
Yeah, there has to be no rise and a variety of other things associated with that. So I imagine there is a process, but the letter of map revision, which Mr. Cox is referring to, would obviously, on the platting end of it, eliminate the 3.76 acres or that roughly that amount of area on a final plat from having to be identified as being sensitive featured land per the sensitivity map. Whatever area may lie then beyond that that's in the fringe, as I was explaining earlier, which is considered developable provided it is elevated 2 feet above, which is permitted per the floodplain development permit process, could be developed given the fact that it's going to be in the FPO overlay unless we amend the text. So the impact initially, and I think this goes to Ms. Burns' point, and I think Mr. Cox's point, if the LOMER have already been issued, we'd be talking roughly an annexation of the entire tract of land because you have to bring the whole tract in, but you'd only be able to develop approximately 3.75 or so acres of that. So the intensity of an MN use is going to be restricted based to that developable footprint. And while the uses are similar to what is in Copperstone in the MN zoning district, which is actually C3, it's a CP zone, the actual intensity of those uses is slightly less because our MC, which would be now the comparable C3 corridor, the MN is your neighborhood uses, so there are variations in the intensities of retail, single shop retail space, and some other activities that are similar in both zoning districts, but because of the variation, the step down, neighborhood step down from the corridor, you are going to see less intense but similar uses. So I think what the applicant was trying to attempt, as I believe Mr. Palmer pointed out as well as Ms. Lamar, is the transition into the neighborhood setting that's behind this property and then moving up towards the park. That's the recognition of the MN. I know when Mr. Cox came to me initially and asked about this site and what the appropriate zoning was, there was lengthy discussion about MC and either my powers of persuasion or his understanding of what the commission's concerns may have been weighed heavily into how the application finally got submitted. However, it is consistent with this node, and the MN from staff's perspective would be appropriate. They were limiting, and you don't know what may happen in the future, but you're limiting with the LOMER really the impact of that development area of a significant development to the 3.75 or 3.76 acres at this point. And it's going to be more up toward the corner. That is where the roundabout, the additional right-of-way, and where the major improvements are there at the corner itself. In general, what I can tell you is the floodway is off-limits from development, period, and unless you go through probably a much more elaborate process, and that is how our development permitting program works. And then floodway or floodplain development is slightly relaxed, but still has regulatory standards that do have to be met. And there are protective standards within the overlay that are similar to, you know, we basically adopt FEMA's requirements to be part of the FEMA program for flood insurance. So I think the platting of all of those features and the identification of those comes out at the platting stage. So the developable portion, the 7 acres and what's actually truly developable, will be better understood as we get to the platting component of this. The intensity of this development, it's difficult to say, don't look at it from the whole, but I think it's fairly understandable that you take out the floodway. You can't develop in that today. Then you have to take out the stream buffer. We still have climax forest preservation possibly on a portion of the site that's going to need to be retained. And then you're going to have to deal with what is really not developable land because of other requirements. So, you know, a conservative estimate, you're dealing with only 3 1/3, 3 3/4 acres of land to be developed, really, out of the 10-plus acre tract.
Still a significant developable, marketable piece.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cox, this, you say you're anticipating brushwood being vacated in March, perhaps, from the county?
Correct.
When did you all ask them to vacate that?
We have a petition to submit tomorrow.
Okay, so you haven't yet submitted that. All right. Question of staff. I'm going to hold that for right now, though. Thank you.
Any additional questions of the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Cox. Any additional speakers that have come forward? I see none. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Commissioners, additional questions? Mrs. Russell.
Well, I don't have a question as much as a comment. I agree with Mr. Stanton. This is an annexation. We will have plenty of opportunities to address what happens to it later on. They're really just asking for the annexation so that they can connect to the city services. And I just think it bothers me that we are taking away the opportunity for them to make a better sale of this property by denying it. And we'll have lots of time to voice our opinion of what goes there.
Mr. McMahon.
I agree with Lee on and Anthony on some of these points. I think annexation is fine. I even think all these other sensitive issues being resolved, MN is what should go here. And I'm glad we've had this discussion now, although we've taken a little time away from the applicant, because I think we need to get a little better process going about which comes first. You know, we've got county issues, we've got FEMA issues, we've got sensitivity issues. But as far as the annexation goes, I'm fine with that, because they should be connected. And I would like a little better process for determining what comes first and when we do zoning and stuff like that. I appreciate all of this. I agree with Commissioner Russell that this will be resolved, the planning process. I just want to make that comment.
Commissioners, Mr. Stanton.
I commend Ms. Lowe for bringing up this issue constantly. It needs to be on our mind constantly, floodway, floodplain, all of that. But we're just asking for annexation. So if there's not anything else to discuss, I would like to make a motion, sir. As it relates to case 17-238, NGT Incorporated Annexation and Zoning, I move to approve annexation and permanent zoning.
Second.
Mr. Chairman.
What zoning are you approving?
MN, the zoning.
Yes, Mr. Zinner. Is that your question?
I think we need to clarify the fact for the public record, so the record is correct. You are not acting on the annexation. That is a policy issue of City Council. You are only recommending the permanent zoning of this property. So if the motion can be reframed to only reflect the zoning recommendation, annexation is a policy matter of City Council.
I move as it relates to case 17-238, NGT Incorporated, the permanent zoning of MN.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton, for the motion. Thank you, Mrs. Russell, for the second. Commissioners, discussion needed on this motion? Ms. Lowe.
I just want to comment that I don't have any conflict with the annexation. However, I don't feel like we've gotten all the information necessary. You've applied for the LOMA, but it hasn't been approved. We've run into some interpretation changes in UDC that, based on the information I have, MN does not seem to me to be appropriate for the information I have in my hand. I understand changes are pending or in the works, but I just wanted to put that comment out there.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Any additional discussion, Mr. McMahon?
Just real quickly, I'm glad Ms. Lowe brought me back to reality there. I'm being asked to approve something that's going to get a LOMA, that's going to be done by the county. I think they both are. That shouldn't be the criterion that I should use to judge this. I should judge it as it is right now. Thank you. And it's a floodway and a floodplain right now. So
thank you for bringing that back up.
Yes, Mr. McMahon, any additional discussion on this motion? Ms. Rushing?
I agree with Ms. Lowe. I just think that zoning at MN is misleading at this point.
Thank you, Ms. Rushing. Mr. Stanton.
This is the zoning they intend to use. All these issues that we've discussed before are still on the table. They may be, they don't know how much space they're going to have until they get all these what ifs answered. We're just kind of giving them, this is the playing field, these are the parameters, and then we'll see what happens when all these other things come into place. They may not be able to develop it at all.
Well, but when they come into place, they can rezone it.
Yeah, they could. But at least let them get annexed and get the ball rolling, in my opinion.
Thank you. Any additional discussion on this motion before we ask for a roll call? Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Lowe.
No.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
No.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
No.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is no. 4-4. Motion is tied.
That's a first.
A recommendation, right? Recommendation.
Chairman, do we need to get a coin out?
No, it has to be an affirmation. That's 4-4 is a no.
4-4 is a no.
4-4 is a no. It has to be a positive motion.
Okay. So are we okay at that, staff? Forward it on for approvals to see.
Well, you'll forward it on for something for council. So
our recommendation will be forward to city council.
Recommendation
for their consideration.
Let me take a look at our rules of procedure here for you.
It's a no.
Yes, I'm in, Chairman.
Tie votes. In the event, according to your rules of procedure, section 21. In the event of a tie vote on a motion, the motion shall be sent forward to the City Council without a recommendation, but with an indication of a tie vote. So that is how it will be sent forward.
So our tied vote will be sent to City Council for their consideration.
That's correct.
Ben.
I have a question for staff. So it still goes to City Council for annexation. The zoning of that possibly annexed land is up for grabs. Is that what we basically determined? But we have not established a zoning.
That was our comment.
No, you have not made a recommendation on the zoning. The applicant's recommendation or the applicant's request will be forwarded for MN with an indication that the Planning and Zoning Commission had a tie vote, in essence represents
We didn't have this discussion.
You had the discussion. You had the discussion quite lengthily, quite honestly. The council will be having to render a decision. And to answer the first part of your question, Mr. Stanton, yes. The City Council will be receiving for their December 18th meeting a resolution to set a public hearing for January 2nd to discuss, have a public hearing on the request to annex the land into the city as required by state statute, the request to zone the property to MN will be introduced at that same meeting. And then on the January 16th council meeting, they will be taking a final vote on establishing or applying zoning to the property, as well as rendering a final decision on the annexation to bring it into the city. Once that process is finished, as we have discussed this evening, there will be final platting required to be coming in at a later date that would address many of the questions that have been raised this evening as to the developable area and other aspects of what may or may not be permitted on this property.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Public comments. Do we have any public comments this evening? Anybody from the public like to come forward? I see none. Staff, Mr. Zinner. Okay. Mr. Palmer.
Next meeting is going to be on December 21st. We have a number of items on that agenda, so hopefully you all are going to be in attendance. There are a total of seven. We saved all the goodies for the end of the year for you, so Christmas gifts and all. Just remember, it's coal in your stocking. We do have, however, two subdivision items. Bright Star subdivision. This is, if you're familiar with where the Jimmy John's is, off of West Broadway, just before we come into the Big Scott curve. Bright Star is a existing daycare facility that is behind the Jimmy John's, behind where our water lift station is, off of what used to be the right-of-way for West Broadway. This is a one-lot final plat. A parcel was created by deed, and we're trying to clean it up and get it to be a legal lot so they can get a building permit to build on a vacant tract of land out there. You have another final plat and a design adjustment for the Branham-Renfro subdivision. This is a parcel that is located at the intersection generally of West Boulevard and Stadium Boulevard. Has the design adjustment that is associated with that is a sidewalk design adjustment. This was a lot that was recently subject to a property transfer between the City of Columbia and the Branhams. Plat was submitted early in 2017, and that is why it has such a low case number associated with it. We needed to resolve the property transfer and transaction issue before we could process the final plat. With the transfer being taken care of, we are able to move the final plat forward now. You have the Villas at Old Hawthorne. This is a major revision to the existing plan development out in that project. We are revising the PUD plan, the former PUD plan layout, which serves also as the subject site's preliminary plat. Therefore, in order to increase the total number of lots, they're changing product type, which is allowed under the PD. However, the lots that were originally shown on the PD plan do not accommodate the proposed product. They went from an attached single-family product now to single-family housing, and they're adding a couple of additional lots. So that's what that major revision deals with. Paris Road Plaza, this is just to the southwest of the interchange of US 63 and Paris Road. This is currently a commercially zoned PD plan. This is the site of the Orchlands that is up on Paris Road, just on the, again, south side of the US 63 interchange. They are proposing to rezone not the Orchlands site, but the two undeveloped tracts of land to the north and the south of Orchlands from its current PD, which is allowed to have roughly 28,000 square feet of commercial development on it, to the IG zoning district in order to increase general marketability of the property for users that have been approaching the landowner. Center State Plat 14, this is a parcel that is to the north of the Vandiver Roundabout that is on the east side of US 63 that connects Vandiver to Mexico Gravel Road, that segment of roadway that was built between the two roundabouts. This is currently, it was zoned as part of the original Center State Plan District plan back in the late 90s, maybe early early 90s or late 90s, I can't remember. PD, no development plan on it. It was for commercial purposes. Again, this is an area that lies between basically the 63 right-of-way and the connecting road between Vandiver and Mexico Gravel, generally an area that's no man's land. And the applicant seeking to pull it out of the commercial PD to be able to put it into an industrial use. For the purposes of dealing with actually what we talked about this evening in our work session, for trade shop contractors type office uses that may be more appropriate in this general location lying between the two roundabouts and having easier access to US 63. The plan district does not provide or permit that type of activity. It does fall more into the industrial zoning district, and therefore an industrial zoning classification has been requested. There is also an accompanying final plat to this particular project that would be presented to City Council. There will be a preliminary plat with this, and that may also be added to this agenda or added to the following agenda, first available agenda in January. And then the last project we have is Red Oak Marketplace. This is south of the Grindstone Walmart where we have the Den. We have the new MyPie and the other commercial development down in that area. The bank is directly across the street from the subject site. This is another major plan revision. This property was zoned in the early to mid-2000s to allow for commercial development under a CP zoning designation. The one lot in question was actually a single larger lot. It has been final platted with the one single larger lot. It is proposed to be divided into four smaller lots. So there is a final plat that would accompany this, but going directly to council, the PD plan is being submitted with the four lots. So there was never a PD plan submitted on this project when it was originally approved. It just received zoning entitlement. The PD plan now is coming in with the four lots shown. That would constitute the preliminary. So if the commission recommends approval of the PD, then we basically process the PD plan to City Council, and concurrently we would process the requested final plat, since it would be consistent with the Red Oak, the preliminary or PD plan that goes along with it. So you have an opportunity to understand where these projects are if you're not familiar with project names or general location. Our Bright Star project, again, just off the map here with the Bright Star project is the big curve that goes into Scott. This is in the front commercially developed property here is the Jimmy John's that you can see off of Broadway just before you pass Strawn Road. Our Branham-Renfro project there at the corner of West and Stadium. Our Villas at Old Hawthorne project, and the area that is being modified is in the center, Clint, if I'm correct. The center that's not highlighted in the red is the area that's being modified from the original approval. Our Paris Road Plaza project, as I said, the building in the middle of that is Orchlands. We're looking at rezoning, considering rezoning of the adjacent out parcels to the north and south. And then you have your Center State Plat 14 rezoning request from PD, the Center State PD, to IG, and then your Red Oak Marketplace, the last developable lot in the Red Oak development, proposed to be platted, a PD planned as four lots, developed with commercial development consistent with the adjacent commercial center, and then final platted into that same four-lot configuration. This evening we covered some significant ground as it related to interpretation of the city code. I do apologize for bringing that issue up, however, felt it was relevant as part of the discussion. Unfortunately, and I think Mr. McMahon hit on this topic, we are learning this code as we engage in projects, and unfortunately, at times the application of particular standards may appear to be not consistent, incongruent, as though we may be favoring one perspective versus another. It is as a result of the fact that we are dealing with multiple layers within the code and provisions that got created that not all of us are familiar with. This particular issue with sensitive features is one that we have to revisit as a staff. We have to revisit as a commission. I believe the application of the standards as they are presented at this point do warrant a discussion within a work session so we are all on the same playing page. What I can tell you from a staff administration perspective, as we are presented the information that we have received, we have to accordingly react to that information, and without anything to the contrary to tell me that what I am reading and what I am seeing, we have applied previously. We have applied previously, unfortunately, in error. And our error, to some extent, has been extended to the commission in your decision-making, which obviously then creates the appearance of being inconsistent. However, when we receive new information, when we receive something that would define an error on staff's part that can be verified through the code, we are required to react to that. And unfortunately, as much as I think it frustrates some on the commission, it comes as a shock to us that ultimately our consultants wrote in provisions that we reviewed. Unfortunately, we read and reviewed what we understood the content to mean, not what was actually written. And as an administrator, as an individual that actually participated in that process at great length, it comes as a shock to me when I come across applicants and consultants presenting us information to justify their position that we have said, no, you're wrong on, and they come back and they present to us, in fact, no, we as the consultant are right, it obviously can be an embarrassment. Though we have to accept, I think, the reality that that is how this code is written, and that is, at this point, how we have to react to that code. There is not, in my opinion, with what we had presented to us this evening, you definitely have a section that says one set of provisions is exempted or is overruled regardless if it is more restrictive. The standard practice in planning and the standard practices in law is when you have a conflict between two ordinances, the most restrictive would apply. So I think what common sense would have dictated is the UDC's sensitive feature standard is the most restrictive, therefore it was absolute. Unfortunately, we have a provision at the very beginning of the code where you have a conflict between codes that clearly says, no, when you have that conflict in that instance, the other less stringent regulation would override. It does seem odd, but that's what we're going to have to go forward with from this point forward until we amend the regulation, because that is what the code says. That's what was adopted. I can't just decide that I can't apply the adopted code. I think we stand probably even a greater level of challenge if we attempt to do that. This particular observation and this particular revelation to us does definitely impact a project that is forthcoming, and it will change how our staff has to review it based on the fact that the provision reads the way that it does. Ultimately, we will attempt, in instances where we can, to have the applicants willingly comply with the standards of trying to avoid sensitive features on property, which is what the intent of the code was. However, when our powers of persuasion cannot compel an applicant to do so, we have to rely on what our other regulatory standards, such as our floodplain ordinance, our stormwater ordinance, and other codes that are administered by separate departments and divisions say in the way of development. That is, you know, a short way of saying we may want something that we felt we wanted. We may be able to retain that when we revise the code, which will be, as I said this evening in work session, we will start that process after the beginning of the new year with revisions that we need to make. This will be one of them, potentially. We have stuff that we need to deal with our tree preservation as well that have come up that have created a significant issue that you are unaware of that we have dealt with internally. and we are dealing with in accordance to what the law department has directed us to do. But there are certain standards that do need to be brought back to the attention of the commission, and they do need to go through a public vetting process. So there are things that we will discuss with you in work session, this being one of them, because I know that this is a concern. Again, my apologies for having to spring this on you this evening. However, it was, in my opinion, relevant to the discussion at hand. It is something that, as we move forward with future projects, this would have come up, because I think there would have been a concern expressed when we actually changed position on a project that would have all the same similar characteristics as what you have already had presented to you. I am fairly confident that the nine of you would have asked us, why are you doing something different? That's the explanation. So with that, I wish you all a wonderful and happy holiday season. I will not be here, as I indicated this evening, at our 21st meeting. You are in the capable hands of my wonderful and very dedicated staff. So enjoy your holidays, and I will see you after the beginning of the new year. And that is all I have to offer for you this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Commissioners, comments? Mr. McMahon.
I have a motion.
Not yet.
I don't? Okay.
Real quick, I'd like to, earlier this evening during our work session, we did our annual election of officials, and I'm honored and thankful for being selected to serve as a chair for another term, and my companions here to my left also were, I'd like to congratulate Ms. Lowe for being the vice chair for another year and Mrs. Burns for being our secretary. So thank you too for contributing for another year. And now we would take any motions.
Have a pleasant evening. That's my motion.
Give a second.
Second.
Thumbs up. Adjourn. Have a nice evening.